everybody. This is Armand DeMille.
And this is Roberta Maria Atti.
With you with the positive mind and that beautiful music, Dance of Children, in the background. That's our theme song, Dance of Children. Dance is such a fascinating thing, let me tell you, when we talk about today's program. We're going to be talking to you about the origin of emotions. Where do emotions come from? What are they meant to do? Why did we develop them? Weren't we good enough without them? As many men I know would say.
Mm. Well,
Many
people think it would be a lot easier if I didn't have any emotions. But
right, I mean, you're just survival of the fittest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we want to talk about emotions and the development of emotions, but in order to do this, we have to unfortunately go back in time. We can't just say emotions were born so that. We have to talk about lush environments. A lush environment is not one where everybody is drinking. A lush environment is an environment whereby everything is kind of perfect.
A lush environment is the kind of environment that could be called like the Garden of Eden, the paradise on earth, with the sunshine every day and fruits on the trees and flowers everywhere and people being mellow and things being easy, things being, you know, not stressful.
Food being readily available, you know, and humans evolved in lush environments because that's what helped them evolve. Because, you know, they're not very good, they're not very equipped fighters. They're not very good for hunting too much, so things had to be relatively easy.
Well, the first thing we could say about emotions, Armand, is that emotions developed with the purpose of facilitating survival, and included in that is, of course, survival of the species, not just survival of the individual. So certain emotions emerged from sexual selection, from the need to select the best genes in order for those genes to make it into the future.
So before you go out and buy new genes, mm-hmm. which actually this relates to, we're going to have to talk about this. Let's go back a little bit, Roberta. So here we have a lush environment, a forest, with a lot of trees, a lot of water, a lot of people, hominids running around, and, you know, and they're kind of doing okay. They don't have any big enemy, and they're doing okay. And then they look at each other, and they notice that one tends to do different than the others. Now, here's a case we're making today. I'm going to make a case for why the person who sings and dances at a wedding tends to have more sex than the person who doesn't.
All right, Armand, let me take it from the beginning here. that's the punchline you just gave away.
The punchline. The wedding singer
is the one who gets it.
Who gets it, right.
Okay, so this is how it started. It seems that when hominids lived in this luscious environment, and they had it pretty easy, and things were not stressful, as I said before, it was nature decided that it was the females that would choose which male they were going to mate with. And that was based on instinct. It was based on smell. It was based on sight. It was based on something that the brain would pick up from the senses that would let the female know that's the right one.
Didn't it, Roberta, at that time, when females were run by only when they're ready, they're only having sex when they're in estrus, right?
That's true.
Just
for
like the animals.
Animals, and it was also for early humans, but
so for
not
early,
at that point anymore.
Well, you mean at this point now, the female learns to select. She's no longer just in estrus, and then any male who wants to have her can have her. She's now selecting.
She's selecting who she's going to mate with, and she, because she's really the gender who is responsible for the future of the species, the brain of the female has been endowed with almost like a sixth sense that helps her figure out which genes are the best ones, and so who she should mate with. Now, so what we have here is a group of hominids, and when I say a hominid, what I mean is a human that is barely human, a human that is already has crossed over from being a primate, being a chimp, being a, you know, an animal, and is a human already, but you know, you can barely tell.
Standing on two legs. With prehensile hands, with hands that have fingers on them.
And with the potential for things that animals are not able to do.
But not the kind of guy any of us would invite over for dinner yet.
Well, I would invite him. I definitely would. So here we go now. So the female is looking, and she says, well, that guy is the one I like, and that's the guy I'm going to mate with. But she doesn't know yet that when she mates, she's conceiving, or she could be conceiving. So this happens absolutely without consciousness.
Question, though, you know, in the past, wouldn't most animals mate based on who's going to give me the strongest baby? The strongest was going to be, you know, give me the biggest mate, give me the...
But no, because back then women did not know that that conception could occur upon mating. That connection had not been made yet. So it wasn't anything based on a logical thought. It was something that was based purely on instinct, mm-hmm. and instinct was driven by things like smell, by feelings, by sight, by just what the sensory apparatus of the female would pick up about that male. Like, for instance, the smell. Smell can tell you a lot about the health of an individual. So the female would smell, and if the male smelled healthy, well, that was a plus.
Or if the smell of the male suggested that he had immune system factors that might enhance her immune system factors,
that too.
She unconsciously would choose for that, whereas she may not mate with somebody who had similar
Correct.
Genetics to hers.
Correct.
So, you know, like a female may not choose to mate with her brother without even knowing he's her brother, you know? But
right.
But something in the smell said, no, he's mm-hmm. too similar.
Right.
We won't have him, which is why a lot of people like people who are the opposite of them.
Right. Yes, right? That's true. So yeah, things like that were things that up until that point were registered in the brain, but not as a result of a conscious thought, more just pure instinct. But then something started to happen. What started to happen was that guys became creative with this mating dynamic going on, and it seems that the males of this hominid species started to do things that that if you observe the chimps, sometimes you'll see a chimp that looks excited, jumps up and down, hits the ground in front of him a couple of times when he's excited. But the humans, males, started to sing and dance.
Now, let's just start off with what we observe nowadays. Do you ever notice you walk down Grand Army Plaza, down Fifth Avenue, near Central Park, and there'll be a bunch of young boys, mostly boys, breakdancing, playing drums, you know, and moving their bodies, and you're fixed by it.
You
find the females look at it, and they go, ooh, look at these guys. Now, they may not know what they're feeling, but there is a reason that you're attracted to these gyrations.
There is something mesmerizing about that movement. There is something that is communicating to a very ancient part of the brain, and that says, it's a form of reassurance, almost. It's almost like the guys are saying, yes, we're here, and we're going to take care of you.
And how does dance get translated into we're going to take care of you? Because that's what happened. What happened was the evolution of music, which means banging on drums, became very hypnagogic, very attractive. And all of a sudden the females would say, ooh, who's making that sound? And then they would see somebody doing gyrations that would dance, what would be called dance, and they'd say, oh, look at the guy making the dance. And then they would see somebody who is making vocal sounds that are different than what they're used to, and they say, ooh, and you got Mick Jagger.
Right.
You know, all of a sudden you're looking up and you're saying, there's somebody who's making rhythmic singing sounds and moving his body, and I can't understand why I'm so attracted to him, but I just can't tear myself away.
Well, I think that that's exactly what happens, Armand, but I think what the message that is being conveyed is a message of the future of the species, because the agile dancers, when they wanted to attract a female, they would dance in such a way where they would convey something to her, of course nonverbal, meaning that the sounds that we're making didn't have a meaning like the words that we use today, but there was a message that was being conveyed of baby, stick around with me, and you're going to be happy. Basically, when you come down to the bottom line, that was the message. Somehow, the brain of the female is so attuned to that, that even today, when you watch a rock singer, you see the same thing happening.
It's kind of mesmerizing, especially to the young woman. A la MTV. I mean, you know, the people watching MTV, they could watch it hours after hours and not know why they're mesmerized by the movement of the videos, you know? And the men who are making the movement and all of that movement as well, notice you don't have the same kind of feeling when you watch Bob Dylan that
right.
you do when you watch the Stones.
Right.
So what's going on? Something is happening inside. Well, the females are feeling something, and here's where we get to human emotion. A thing is born, a kind of a feeling, when you see someone who sings or dances or plays a rhythmic instrument. Something inside you happens.
Right. What happens is that the dance and the song evoke an emotion that perhaps we could call love or falling in love, or an emotion that feels really good. And then what the female does is instinctively she wants to send those genes into the future. She wants to create that beauty and propel that beauty into the future through having a baby with that person. That's really very, very simple. When the female is mesmerized by the dance and the song of the male, and I mean, think about it, the male who engages in this activity is investing his own energy, time, and self in letting the female know that he is good enough to be chosen as the one whose genetic structure will make it into the future. So it's really the genes who are dancing here.
Enough people, Hughes in 1973, who talked about studying male dance, McBride in 1974, Corballis, Darwin studied singing, the voices, you know. Livingston was into the rhythms of people and how they did rhythms. Said there was this thing that evolved with this one statement. When a male can evoke beauty, they become attractive and they become desirable as mates. Now, mind you, this is different than the male who could, you know, get you a better salami. This is a male who is suddenly evoking in you a feeling of beauty.
And that's a birth of an emotional state that you can name however you want to name it, but we all know and recognize because it is so familiar. It's a state in which we feel somehow we are connected to the present like never before. I mean, we're completely in the present, in the moment. The feeling is so exquisite that we're in the moment, but we also feel this opening. There's an opening that happens with that feeling that almost makes us merge with the beauty that surrounds us, the universe, the world, the flowers, nature. And then the beauty of children. So the female, in the, she's looking at this dancer and listening to him, and her mind is expanding into this world of beauty, and she's experiencing it inside herself, and she's absolutely ecstatic. And then the next thing you know is she knows that that guy is going to be the one she's going to mate with, and his genes are going to be sent into the future.
So a young girl goes to a young adolescent woman, goes into classroom, sits in her new class in high school, and there goes this boy, walks in the room, and he's kind of kidding around, and he's smiling, and he has a certain movement to him, and she looks at him, and her world opens up, and she falls in love. And they may call it puppy love, but this experience of that's it, that's all I want, can easily lead from that moment to, oh boy, if I could get him alone, I would love to have sex with him. Without even thinking sex, it means I want to mate with you.
It's the first, I think it's the first experience of an expansion of the self, where the self really can merge with another and with the rest of the world around. It's the first time that a person says, wow, I'm connected to everything else. It's being in love. And that's what the dance evokes. That's what the dancer, these, imagine these hominids that really look not that different, not that much different from a chimp. All of a sudden creating this incredible beauty and this feeling state that is this feeling of merging with the universe, merging with divinity. And now but now what happens next is that because song and dance require such an incredible brain activity, so intense and such a development of the brain has to occur. Now you have a sudden enlargement of the brain whereby humans now become endowed with this huge brain.
What they say is that as a result of the song and dance, the brain enlarged tremendously. They say 10 times its size.
Of course.
10 times its size.
Because when the males realized that this was working, they started to engage in it more and more and more, and they became more and more creative and expressive.
Because it requires more of a brain to do it.
Well, it requires more surface, yes. It requires more tissue, it requires an expansion of tissue, and especially the limbic system. I mean, the emotions that humans are capable of, animals cannot experience because they don't have all that complicated brain tissue that evolved through that singing and dancing.
I don't see many dogs that dance.
They try, but it's very basic. I mean, some animals actually do engage in
certain
in
birds
song
do
and dance,
for sure,
but nothing like what humans do.
So here it is, you know, going back to the wedding party. You've got to consider that I'm going back to my wedding party. You're going back to a wedding party. You're at a wedding, and at this wedding, you have a very what we call a lush environment, much like. Humanity kind of evolved from. It was a lush environment. You can look at a wedding. There's food everywhere. There are people everywhere. It's friendly. There are no true predators. There's music. And then suddenly, at many weddings, as we'll see, especially I've been to Greek weddings and Jewish weddings where this takes place, the men get up and they dance together. And now the men are dancing and they're doing hoopa and they're doing all of this stuff. And one wonders, well, that's because of their camaraderie. No. No camaraderie. Here we have men showing who they are. So the available females somewhere around do stare at the men who are dancing. And from that, they start getting signals and feedback.
Because often at a wedding, you will have friends of the bride who are not married yet. Right? So it's a perfect environment for the males to show off and to find a bride.
And females dance together too. And for a similar kind of thing, because as they have the giggle, the jiggle
though.
Response, right? That
it's
the,
different though, right. It's right, a different dynamic.
Women who dance together very often can be attracting. You know, they can be doing so because, you know, when a woman has nobody to dance with and she dances with one of her friends.
But what we're saying here is that women selected culture the way it developed because they selected those males who would manifest the expressive, the creative movement and vocal expression that was the most beautiful, that was the most inspiring. So women selected for that, and this is what happens when you leave things to nature. Nature designed the female, put the female in charge of selecting what genes are going to make it into the future. And so if you leave things up to the women, this is what happens. They select males that are creative, expressive, and that evoke beauty within their souls.
But a funny thing happens.
Right. As it often does.
As it often does. The best laid plans of mice and men often go awry. What plans do mice ever have? You know what he says, best laid plans of mice and men?
Kafka?
You think that mice have a lot of plans?
Mice seem to have a lot of plans, but
no,
I
you
think
know, let's
nothing,
go get the cheese.
Nothing
you know?
Like humans.
So maybe they want the cheese to go on rye. Maybe that's where it comes from. Okay, anyway. You know, best laid plans of mice and men often go on rye. No, it's awry.
Awry, right.
Awry. Okay. On rye. Mice. Men. So men have this, they've got this dance strategy down pat.
And,
their brains are getting bigger.
And their
but
brains
this,
are getting bigger.
This poor pineal gland.
Right.
What happens to the pineal gland?
Well, what happens is that eventually, of course, there are changes in the environment, such as, for instance, the change in the climate and movement from the southern, from the tropics and the equatorial areas up further up north. So you have a change in the environment, and that causes changes in the behavior and in the physiology.
So they are living in nice Manhattan. You're living downtown somewhere in the southern Lower East Side. Everything is nice. The sun is nice. You got food everywhere. Everything is fine. The people are fine. But then you have a reason to move. Now, you can move for any one of three reasons, right? You could move because food disappears. There's no more food down there. You could move because another predator comes in. Somebody moves into the neighborhood that makes it uncomfortable for you. So as an early hominid living in a lush environment, you may have attracted a Tyrannosaurus who likes to eat humans. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Unlikely.
Something like that, right.
Something like that, right. And so you said,
a tiger, most likely.
A tiger. Let's get out of here because, you know, I'm sick and tired of the tigers every day, you know.
I've had it with tigers up to here, right.
I want to move out of the neighborhood. Let's move up to the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
You realize how long it took them to travel? It's not easy because there were no subways.
They didn't have wheels, for one thing. It took a while to invent the wheel.
So right. They're just saying, well, let's move a little, maybe an inch.
Well,
week we'll move another inch next week, and
what happened actually was that eventually the population grew and they had to expand. They had to search new territories. One thing and another, things got colder. So what happened was that lush environment was lost, meaning that it either because the people had to move up north or because of cooling down, there was a loss of that bounty, of that warm weather where everything's easy, and where a female, by the way, could even raise her young by herself in a tropical environment.
Well, what you're saying is in a wedding.
In a wedding,
you can bring up your own
everything
child.
Everything seems easy.
Everything is perfect. So
because
if
you have a lot of food, you have a lot of people around you.
Even
it's
if
not
you
dangerous.
Don't have a male, even if you don't have a mate, you could pick a fruit off the tree and feed your kids.
Right. When things are easy, things are easy. But when things get difficult, this is when you get creative. So what happened was that eventually people moved to a climate that was not so friendly. There wasn't so much food available, especially the vegetable food, the fruits and the roots and the berries, etc. So now we had to rely more on hunting. And now it got colder, so you had to dwell in the cave instead of just sleeping on the trees.
There were times when you couldn't go outside at all.
Right,
because
when
it would be
cold.
So cold, so you had to learn how to preserve whatever food you had.
Had to preserve the food, and then you would run out of food, so you would have to go out and get some more. But you would dwell in the cave, so you would have less light because there was more inside dwelling, and also because the northern latitudes, of course, we have shorter days in the winter.
So here go these nice hominids who were living in this lush environment are suddenly living in caves, and it's cold in there, you know?
And it's dark.
And it's cold, and it's dark, and you've got to bring up your baby, but now, how do you bring up your baby? You can't go out and go hunting. You know, so this kind of thing manifested. Now, why would it manifest? It would manifest because of one of two things. Either you move to a colder climate, or the climate you're in became colder. And these things happened.
And so now you have climatic shift. Now you have different emotions that are coming out. Now you have sadness. Now you have worry. Now you have fear. Now you have all these other things that are coming in. And these emotions are not pleasant, like the one of the female that's looking at the dancer. So now you have to figure out a way in which you have to bring up the good emotions again. And
now
what do you do?
And what's even worse, Roberta, once you're in that cave, singing and dancing start getting eliminated because, number one, you've got to protect whatever food you have. And if you're singing, you may attract other animals, as well as other hominids are going to come and eat your stash.
And you can't really sing and dance that much inside a cave.
And
it's
dancing
slippery.
In a cave is not easy.
It's very slippery, and then you have these pointed rocks
and
under your
feet.
And a
waste of energy.
And they have a waste
and because
of energy,
you have
right.
energy conservation that you have to be concerned
right.
with.
Right.
So here we have my friend.
So the singing and dancing could not be used that much anymore. And now you have a very different structure and a very, very different environment.
And so when we get back after our break,
big change happened.
Big change, which led to modern man, which led to why you want your man to talk to you and tell you what he feels and why it may be a big mistake, which is what we're going to come back to.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be a good idea to go back to having more weddings.
I agree.
Or at least going to the weddings.
How about the lush environment? I want to go to a lush environment.
Yeah.
I do.
This is Armand Amour. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, a little music, and then we're going to present the story.
Yes.
This is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, and this is Reverend Jesse Jackson. Please call and support WBAI, Non-Commercial Peace and Justice Radio in New York.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
Thank you.
think to yourself, music like this really talks to the human heart. And what it's saying is, you know, let me be the one you love, want me, notice me, let me be the person you choose. And we're talking about selection. You know, women would choose to be impregnated by a single practitioner of the song, the dance, and the hunt. They would choose, when they saw the dancer and they saw the singer, they would automatically say, I want to mate with that person. And this is, it's a funny thing. The singer and the dancer would mate with many, many females.
Well, yes, the kind of society that we're describing is early hominids, where conception was not associated with sex. So mating was not something that was done with the intention of procreating. It was only done because that's what came natural. And so when the woman would look at the guy singing and dancing, she would feel something that would communicate. See, this is the way in which males found a way to communicate something to females. The male found a way to communicate his genetic structure, his genetic endowment, his genetic memory, whatever he had that was good. He found a language that was a body language that would convey that to the female. She would understand that language, and she would respond accordingly. And when you just heard that song just a couple of minutes ago, yes, you did hear the words that said, stay with me, I love you, etc. But you also heard the intonation of the voice, you heard the rhythm of it, and that conveyed something as well as the meaning of those words.
Let me give
but
you
back a then, I just wanted to say, back then, there were no words yet. It was only the body language and what it expressed, and the vocal sounds and what they could express directly to the feeling.
That's it, because it's what it evoked in the female. I'm going to quote here from David Spuler, 1979. Through dance and gesture, talented communicators in this physical language of dance were selected for as mates because they engendered an experience characterized by feeling part of something larger than self. Now, this is a very, I'm going to step out of the quote for a moment. They felt it made the females feel something larger than self. We call that feeling love. But there was an expanded consciousness that was evoked. It was the feeling of beauty that the females would feel by watching the men go through their gestures. Back to the quote, these physical language users summoned a world that existed because of their skills, a world other people could temporarily occupy, a ritual, mythic world.
But see, the flavor of this is so special because what you're thinking of is a world in which there's no language, and so the communication occurs directly, meaning that when I'm vocalizing, I use my voice to communicate something directly to your feeling state without using any intermediary. So it's direct, and it creates a feeling in the moment. In the moment when we are together, my body language and my sound language is in the same moment as yours, and I'm able somehow through my artistry, me being a male, I'm saying, I'm able through my expressive creativity to now build a bridge between me and you so that you feel merged with me in that dance because of the experience of beauty that you are able to access. So that's the imminence of this expanded self, and that's the beginning of a number of emotions, not just love. That's the beginning of an emotional group of emotions that have to do with love and affection and self-expression and a lot
expanded
of other things.
Expanded consciousness and God. But, you know, actually love doesn't have a definition because it would in itself include all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so this feeling, this gigantic feeling that a female would feel by watching this guy go through the gyrations was the same way you felt when you looked at Elvis Presley on stage. It wasn't just lust. It wasn't just that kind of thing. It was much more than that. It was a whole world of, I have to shut off
the phone. And there are no words attached. Let's not forget there is nothing that separates the experience of beauty and the experience of merging with this larger self. There's nothing that separates the mind of the woman from that moment of ecstasy. Nothing. It's all there in that moment, in that body language, in that sound.
And since there's no language, there's nobody standing next to you saying, watch out for that guy, he's a charmer.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because what's going to happen is he's going to have sex with you, then he's going to go on and have sex with the next person who's charmed, and the next one who's charmed, and the next one who's charmed, and he's not staying anywhere. But, you know, the truth of it is, in that
but
environment...
But actually, back then, that was how it was. Because,
and it didn't matter, because everybody had everybody's baby.
And no one really thought that sex had anything to do with procreation, so there was no jealousy yet. There was
no fidelity, right?
And the men in a tribe, in a group of people, the men of the tribe would protect all the children in the tribe, not just their own, so that, you know, it was a very... well, what should we call it, Armand? Egalitarian, a very non-hierarchical, a very... But I don't know. But there could be a lot of ways to define it, and I don't want to define it. I just want to describe it. But it was this environment where communication was dawning, emotions were being established and communicated, and the brain of the human was expanding as a result of this.
Now, then you move out of, you have these climatic changes, and you suddenly are in a different environment, and we promise to tell you the story of what happened to human emotions and humans when suddenly dance goes away and singing goes away, no longer functional.
Well, for one thing, you have, because of the colder environment, now you have a need to engage in more hunting. And so what happens is that the men in the tribe now need to figure out a way in which they only go out once a week instead of every day, because it's freezing out there, and they just want to get that mammoth and come back with it so that everybody can feed for a week without having to go out again. So in order to kill a mammoth, one man alone can't do it. You need the whole group of men. How do you organize a hunt? You're a hominid. You can't speak. You can sing and dance, and you can mate, but you can't speak. How do you organize a hunt with 30 other guys where everybody's coordinated enough that you can get a big animal like a mammoth? How do you do that?
I have an idea.
Okay.
I'll make a drawing. I'll draw a circle, and I'll point at you.
And I'll say,
I'll use some of my dancing training,
okay,
my singing. I'll go, and I'll put you over there,
mm-hmm,
see? And I'll put a little mark.
And I'll think that you're talking about my aunt, I don't know, my aunt...
Well, as I develop it, though, I will eventually be able to give you different sounds representing different people in the tribe. And then, as I use my different sounds from my singing, I'll have to cut them short because I can't make them too loud, and singing doesn't pay here. I will develop a vocabulary to communicate with you, and you will eventually understand from my pointing and making a sound that this means you and that you're supposed to go there. And you trap the lion, you get the lion on that side, now you get the lion on this side, and this is how we do it. So men, hunters, evolve language. To hunt.
Yes.
Because humans are the worst equipped hunters. on the planet. I mean, how bad can you be? Maybe a panda is not so good as a hunter. You know what I mean? Maybe a...
But it's better than a human.
Better than a human.
It's stronger.
Claws. It's got... Right.
Right. Much stronger. Right. Humans are probably just about the worst in terms of the hunting equipment. We don't have any teeth. We have very little teeth. We have a small mouth. We
no
don't
claws,
have
right.
claws. We're not strong enough. We're not fast enough. We're not agile enough.
And practically everything we'd want to catch would either be faster than us, like a rabbit, or it would be bigger than us.
Right. And we have babies now that, because they have a brain that is so big, they are born way underdeveloped. See, the brain of a human has to develop once the baby is born, because the brain of a human is such a huge job that it cannot develop in uterus, or else the head of the baby would be way too big to make it out through the passage that it has to come out of. So, to make a long story short, the women cannot hunt because the woman has to take care of the human infant who needs care for at least 3 or 4 years. It's 3 or 4 years before she can leave this baby and go out and hunt if she wants to do that. But that doesn't make sense. So what Armand is saying is that now that the song activity had developed a certain physiology in the vocal structure of humans, the ground was established to switch over to speech. So speech didn't evolve. Speech emerged. It emerged out of singing. And speech, however, is very different from singing, because in speech, you have, I'm going to explain a concept now that's a little bit complex. In speech, if you say cup, C-U-P are letters and they don't make any sense by themselves unless you know that that means a cup. So in order for you to understand cup, you need to know that that C-U-P means that object that looks like that. So the speech is removed from the moment. It's abstract. Speech requires one step more in the thinking in order to get to what it means, right? You know, do you know what I'm saying?
You have to remember one thing. You have to be able to go backwards.
And you have to agree on what word means what.
But you have to have memory of association, right? Because if you say I C-U-P, that could be embarrassing. You mean C-U-P means cup.
Right. C-U-P, I mean that there's a word like sun. Well, sun means nothing unless you've learned to associate it to the sun.
Okay, so now your mind has to do two things. It has to have a memory of an association that the other person has. When you say the word cup, that by person has to say, I remember cup from the last times we had cup. And you also have to be able to project forward.
Right.
If you say, get me a cup.
Right.
You have to say, there's no cup present. I want a cup to be present in the future, meaning even seconds from now. So now
words have become symbolic of objects and people and things. And when people speak, they're no longer communicating to the feeling state. They're communicating to the mind. They're communicating to a different organ, to a different apparatus, to a different piece, to a different aspect of life. They're not communicating to the heart and the womb and the feeling and the emotions. They're communicating to the mental structure that can remember associations of words and symbols. So now you have a different brain location activated with speech, and now we get into the interesting part.
Now it gets to be trouble, so let's get this straight. Speech is of the intellect and of the mind. So when you're doing this to develop speech, of course you need bigger brains, right?
Yes.
We had big brains from dancing.
It was set up, yes.
Right, big brains from dancing, it's set up.
And now, singing.
Now singing, mm-hmm. And now the brain's even going to get bigger.
It's going to get bigger, and it's going to become more complex because now you have to abstract.
So now you're going to abstract. So now you could abstract something like, hey, I'd like to eat a deer.
And if you say deer...
Somebody says, oh, I know what he's talking about.
But how do they know?
Because they've learned through speech and association.
We've agreed.
And then, when I can say to you, every day at 5 o'clock, the deer goes in the chasm. So maybe we could build a trap so it'll go in the chasm, right? And this way we'll get a deer. That's some complex thought.
Well, wait, that sounds very simple, right? It sounds like, well, of course, that's what we're going to do. We're going to set a trap, and the deer comes by, and he's going to fall in the trap.
So you cut the twigs, and you dig the hole.
Look at how complex this becomes in the speech that is required in order to agree that that's what we're going to do.
Sure.
So in order
just try to
hunt,
get Yo-Yo or Paris, try to get your cats or your dogs to do it.
Right.
Right?
Just to get to that point required thousands of years. And now you have people who are using their brains in a way that's completely different because now they're not communicating to the emotions anymore. They're communicating to the mind.
Oh, this is so exciting. This is Armand DeMille and Roberta
Maria
Atti.
But there's another element of time, that speech is sequential. You have to put the words in a sequence in time, one after another, in order for them to make sense. And so now you can talk about the future and the past. Up until that point, that didn't exist.
Armand DeMille, Roberta Maria Atti, The Positive Mind here in WBAI. Hey, what are we talking about? We're talking about the evolution of human emotions, and we will be talking about this in subsequent weeks as well. We're going to be putting together the research on this, which is mostly done by Roberta Maria Atti. It's fantastic. The information we have to bring you is great. So here we are at this point now. Humans are developing emotions. We thought we had emotions developed with dance. You could trust a guy who dances. Well, at least you could trust what you feel.
Trust what you feel.
Right. You trust what you feel, right? But then all of a sudden we take away dance and we take away song and we take away drumming and we put in speech. And now the guy is talking. And the one who talks the best is the most attractive.
But guess what?
Let's deal with how attractive he is.
Okay.
Let's not go to the bad news yet. The good news is he who speaks best.
Hunts best
and gets the nicest dates.
Right, because he who speaks best is he who can take control of the tribe, is he who can plan and organize the activities that the tribe needs to engage in. It's he who can set the trap best. Is he who can get the men ready to go. Is he who can do all these things through speech. But it's also he who can lie. He who can say things that are not true. Now we're talking about also past and future. It's he who can say, tomorrow we're going to do this and that and the other. Or, yesterday, this is what happened. Think about how amazing it is to be in a world where there's no tomorrow and there's no yesterday because you don't have the words to think about tomorrow and yesterday. And all of a sudden, you can now describe time, tomorrow and yesterday.
So guys realize, they realize, them with speech, realize that by using this speech, I can get more mates. I can have more sex.
Well, and also because these are the guys that are more successful at the activities that are required for survival, these are the men that women selected for.
So I can still get more sex. That's the idea. The idea is...
The more I speak, the more
sex I
get.
The more I speak and the more efficient I am at it, the more sex I get. And so now, women will very frequently say it is a man's voice that will get them way beyond other characteristics of theirs because there is something about the speaking voice that is so attractive. Think of poetry and the evolution of poetry.
There is a way in which through speech one can convey one's genetic structure.
And one can convey beauty through speech.
Which is part of the genetic structure.
Right.
Yes.
So now we have this, here comes the bad news. So we have the ability of speech being now selected instead of dance, instead of singing, instead of rhythm, we have now speech becomes more selective in a more difficult environment. In the more difficult environment, meaning in climates that are tough.
Well, it made survival possible, so it was a good thing. We're not saying it was a bad thing, but what it did is it removed people's emotional connection to the moment. And it now made people able to project their emotions into the past and into the future, because now I could be scared of what could happen tomorrow, or I could be sad about what happened yesterday. That didn't occur until I was able to create a time frame in my mind, and the time frame did not occur until I could speak and put things in a sequence that went from A to Z.
Fabulous, Roberta. Beautifully said. Exactly. With speech came the emotions related to regret, remorse, hope.
Right.
All of these things came out of the evolution of speech, but something else came with speech. Back in the old days, back at the wedding, right, at the wedding ceremony where everything was lush, it was fine. You had dancing and singing, and you know what happened with dancing and singing? Testosterone was not as important, was it?
Well, testosterone was what it was, and it was selected for as necessary. But with the emergence of speech, because of what was required in order to maintain that speech behavior, the men that had the highest testosterone levels were the ones that could that were selected for, because they were the ones that would take control and take lead and organize the hunt and do all of this. So the testosterone level was higher in the men that were selected for by the women. So now you have women who select men who can speak, and the men who can speak are those with the higher testosterone level than those who can just sing and dance. So what you have now is a new human emerging who is the modern human. And this is the human who is able to dissociate from his or her feeling state, is able to abstract in the mind, is able to speak, is able to verbalize, is able to be effective at abstract thinking. But these are the guys that had higher testosterone.
So they're driven sexually, and they become the selectors. Instead of the female becoming the selectors of the mate, they can use their speech and their drive to become selective. So this...
Well,
this,
what they do is they take control of who mates with whom.
Yeah.
Once they figure out that sex and reproduction goes together, they take control of whose genes are going to make it into the future, and now they decide who's going to mate with whom.
And we're going to have to bring you, next time we're going to bring you much more about this. But here's the final information about this, my friends. When a man speaks, it activates his brain, and in a special part of his brain, it activates the pineal gland, which triggers more testosterone. And in effect, here's what we're saying. When you try to get a man to talk who's not comfortable talking, he's going to get angry, because that's brain chemistry.
Hmm. Yes. Speech goes hand in hand with the patriarchal system.
And it goes hand in hand with aggressive and anger.
With the whole patriarchal hierarchical system. And with high testosterone, absolutely. So get your man to dance.
That's it.
Tell him to be quiet
or
and dance.
Or
sing.
Sing if he
can
dance.
Paint, that would be good too. Paint your cave. Or play your drums.
This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. So much information, and we've just touched the surface. We're talking about human emotion. We will be back with you next Wednesday, Roberta and I. I'll be back tomorrow.
My website is www.creativehealthsolutions.org.
And you can get a copy of today's program by either going to my website or going to thepositivemind.com.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Armand.
You too, Roberta.